will deal with the Tikkun HaSagaonim. And as we saw in the very first shiur on this subject, by the time of the Gaonim, the primary issue was no longer that of conversion of ordinary converts, because that was illegal and somewhat discouraged. But there was a problem with slaves. In the Torah, a slave, I'm talking now about an Eved Knani, not an Eved Ivri, is a member of your household. And presumably, when you acquire a slave, you're obligated to see to it that he keeps whatever are the necessary mitzvahs of the household. And the structure was such that, you know, in Yeser HaSedivos, it mentions the entire family structure, including slaves and so on. I think as we saw that as far as the conversion of wives, of women was concerned, I think in the time of the Tanakh, or at least in most of the biblical period, they became Jewish simply by marrying a Jewish husband, and therefore becoming part of a Jewish household. Presumably, in the time of a similar arrangement was what was happening for the case of Avodim. But by the time of the Gemara, of course, you have this formal notion of conversion. And the problem is that an Eved, when he is acquired, well, before we say he's acquired, we have a status of an Eved Kanani, right? An Eved Kanani is a person who is Jewish to the extent that he is chayav in all mitzvos except mitzvos aseh shehazmangrom. So that he has certain disqualifications. He may not count to a minyan. He may not be allowed to marry a free Jewish woman. But on the other hand, to some extent, he's Jewish. How does he get to be Jewish? Well, obviously, there must be some form of milah and tevilah at the time that he's acquired, assuming that he's not born as a slave. Then there might be a second stage when he is set free, that he becomes a full-fledged Jew. The Gemara Kiddushin mentions the various technical details as far as setting him free, as far as the issue of ownership is concerned, but there's also a requirement for a tevila, for example, for him to become a full-fledged Jew. The problem is, so therefore, for example, a slave has two stages. If he first becomes an Eved Kanani, and if he's then freed and then becomes a Jew, instead of becoming converted into a full-fledged Jew in one operation, there are two separate stages. The second stage may not necessarily ever occur. He may remain an Eved Kanani for the rest of his life and his descendants' life and so on. So where does Kabbalah's old mitzvos fit into either of these two stages? For example, is there a requirement of a Beis Din and Kabbalah's old mitzvos at the second stage when the Eved Kanani becomes Meshuchra? The Gemara, which I haven't reproduced for you, says, Echad Ger of Yechad Eved Meshuchra, Kasolka Daitach LaKabel Alav Old Mitzvos, that the Eved Kanani, who becomes an Eved Meshuchra and a full-fledged Ger, both have the same status as far as requiring the Beis Din for Kabbalah's Old Mitzvos. So, Raminu Bamed Varim Amurim B'Ger, Avol B'Eved Meshuchra Ein Tzorich LaKabel. Amar Av Sheshes Lo Kadja Hora B'Shem Ben Elazar Hora Banan Tanya Bachta Tavia Et Imrach Bamed Varim Shelo Kibla Alav O Kibla Alav Matvila Mutav Bamiyav B'Shem Elazar Mechuti Shelo Kibla Alav Kofa U'Matvila L'Shem Shifkut V'Chose U'Matvila L'Shem Shifkut U'Mashachura U'Mutav Bamiyav. Amar Rava, my taima to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. What's the reason for Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar? Dichtiv kol eved ish miknat kesef. Eved ish velo eved isha. Ela eved ish atamol bal kocho. Ve'i atamol ben ish bal kocho. Ve'rabanan amri, ve'rabanan amar ula v'shignit shi atamol bal ish bal kocho, kach I atamol eved bal kocho. So the Gemara leaves open a fundamental issue, namely, at the time that you acquire a slave, and he's now become an Eved Kanani, can he be forcibly circumcised and pushed down into the mikvah, so that he becomes a Jew without any voluntary acceptance of anything on his part? Can it be a purely coercive act? And the Gemara leaves this issue open. It says it's a machlokus between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. And of course, a corollary of this is that if the initial acceptance was coerced, then presumably if he then wants to become a free man, there should be Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos at the second stage. And if the conversion had to be voluntary, then presumably the second tevilah is just a formality and would not require all of the laws that the Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos and the tevilah that would require for someone becoming a ger. The Gemara leaves this open. It's ambiguous. I was quoting from you from the bottom of Daf Mem Zayin on the Beis and Daf Mem Chet in Yevamot. On the pages that I handed out, there's a secondary Gemara, namely, if you maintain that the conversion of the Eved has to be to some extent voluntary, it cannot be completely coerced, then what do you do if he doesn't want it? So the Gemara, if you look at the first page, it says, "Halokeach eved mina oved kochavim, v'lo ratza limol." If someone buys a slave from a non-Jew, and the slave doesn't want to become circumcised, "Megalgel imo ad yud beis chodesh," he can be kept up to a year. "Lo mol," if within that 12-month period he still refuses to become circumcised, "Choseu mocholi oved kochavim." Amur Rabbanon kamei derav Papa keman the loke Rabbi Akiva. This is not according to Rabbi Akiva's position. The Rabbi Akiva hamar ein mekaymin, that you can't keep them at all. A slave who does not wish to become part of the Jewish faith to any, even in a minimal extent, that is being a slave, cannot be kept. Amalu Papa filu tem Rabbi Akiva hani mil heicha de lo paskal le milte. It's not clear what that means, and we'll see that there's various interpretations of that. Etc. Etc. So, and then the Gemara a little later on says, etc. So, as we can see from this Gemara, the situation is a little ambiguous on this very issue as to whether a slave can be coerced into becoming a Jew at the time of his purchase. And if we turn to my page 10, I guess it is, I reproduced for you a Tosfos, who is, of course, after the era that we're talking about, but at least it gives you a picture of how the Rishonim, Tosfos and the Rishonim understood the Gemara. Perish Pekuntos, Velashon Sheni, the Eved Ish, Afal Gav, Shehu Gadol, Uven Dat, Malta Oto, Roma Bal Kocho, Ve'iatamol Ben Ish Ger Habalit Gayer, Enlan Koch Lemol Beno Gadol, Bal Kocho, the Gabi Banin Krivimolo, Kol Zacho, Velofti Bohu Kol Ish, Kimo Gabi Eved. Udavar Tema Perish, the Krahimdimolo, Kol Zacho, Kinu, Milat Scharach, Shemakotome, Lachol of Pesach, Velozer, Zelo Shaikh, Elbanim, Shenol Dubikusha, Napal Milat Banov, Shalom, Nol Dubikusha, Enmi Akadome, Akol Pesach, Venir Lotso, Kol Dubashmine, Vieta Mol Ben Ish Balkoho, the Meli Adin and Shaloy Garubu Balkoho, Boodomi, Fatoa Shamin, the Einmalin Ger Balkoho, the Hoyfatoa, Einmatilinota Balkoho. Umidiso, Hachmana, Lahamtin, Lashloshimium, Vakabla, Lane, Sir Clumpton, Lovnath Yellow, Fushimilk, etc. Of course, historically we know that there were conversions which were forced in the Maccabean period, but all right. So let's come to the end of the Tosfos here. Okay. Ulakaman, about four lines from the bottom. Ulakaman, Ka'amar Halokeach, Eved Merved Kochim, Lorot Salom, Gargelim, or Yubay Schodish, Vimolo Tobal Kocho. Why are they waiting around for 12 months if it's conceivable that it's possible to forcibly convert the slave? But Omeri, the Takanot Chachamim, he, Shelo Yachshilet Rabovi Isur Veheter. You don't want to forcibly convert slaves in your household, because then they will deliberately mix the meat and milk together and do other various things in the kitchen. So that therefore it's not a good idea, even though, Tosfos is saying, even though halachically it's permissible to forcibly convert an Eved, nevertheless it's not a good idea. Kevan de'ein makabel alav ol mitzvot, it's not a good idea to make him obliged to perform various mitzvot. Remember, all of the mitzvot lo tasei apply to an eved when he doesn't desire to do so. The point of all of this is that even Tosfos realizes that the Gemara hasn't really come to a firm conclusion on the issue of whether it is possible or not possible to forcibly convert a slave. And if it is not possible to forcibly convert him, what happens at the time of manumission? Is there or is there not a requirement for Kabbalah, the Olmetz vote, and so on? And I don't know to what extent these were... of course, these problems that Tosfos are discussing did not exist as practical problems for Tosfos. Slavery, as an institution in Europe, did not really exist to any great extent, and certainly Jews were not allowed to have Christian slaves in Christian Europe or Muslim slaves in Muslim Europe. So in any event, we can safely say that after the 12th or the 13th century, individual household slaves, that is, slavery as an institution, became converted into feudal society in which they were serfs, who were sort of generalized slaves to the upper classes or maybe to the landlord. But the notion of an individual householder having slaves and the idea of a slave trade did not exist. However, in the period of the Gaonim, this was a real honest question. And what I propose that we spend the shiur on tonight is simply to read a selection of material provided very nicely by the computer. This is an example of where one doesn't. I knew many of these, and I know many of the others before, but there's some tribus in here that I didn't know. And here's an example where, when you have a very limited topic and you can search for Eved and Shibcha, you can the Bar Ilan database can provide you with a rich source of material. So what I'm proposed to do tonight is, even though it's we may be spending more time on this subject that's warranted main thrust of this shiurim, which is the laws of Geirut, since this raw material is so interesting in and of itself, it's just a fascinating body of material that even if we don't spend any time conceptualizing it or deriving any consequences from it, the material itself is pretty good. Now, from the Encyclopedia Judaica, I simply reproduced these chuvos as they appeared in the collection of chuvos, which means that they're not in chronological order necessarily. So, as a scorecard for you to keep track of who and when the Gaonim actually were, I xeroxed the page from the Encyclopedia Judaica, so you can sort of know who the various players are. The first chuva is coming from one of the last of the Gaonim, Rav Hai. And it refers to an episode. It shows the effects of an episode in Jewish history that had occurred some 300 years earlier. Usha Sha'altem. Give them to Ellen. Usha Sha'altem. My page 11. All that I propose to do for the next hour and a quarter is read through the raw material. I xeroxed for you at the end of this an analysis of this body of material by Simcha Asaf, and then a later analysis by Wacholder, if you're interested in historical overviews and conceptual analysis. But here,
so Rebbe, you're just going to read now.
We're going to read and discuss,
and
but not conceptualize.
And no concepts or nothing.
Right.
Oh, good, because this doesn't work.
Good. Right. Rav Hai. Usha Sha'altem. A man impregnated his non-Jewish slave girl, and she gave birth to a son. Now he brought the infants to be circumcised. He admitted the paternity of his child, and that the slave girl was pregnant from him. Afterwards, he set this or the slave free. And now he died without any other children. So he had a child by this slave girl and died without other children. And he had three brothers. And one of the brothers immediately performed yibum on the widow. Okay. That was a great financial advantage there. The to'ein sha'oto ben shenolad min ha'shibcha eved gamuhu. This child that was born of the slave girl is a pure eved. Lefi shenolad kodem shenitkaira. V'titbol v'lo k'tuva v'lo k'dushin. The to'ein echav shelo haita eshet ha'mesh zvuka lo yavam klal. The oto ben shenolad lo min ha'shibcha potcha. The other two brothers maintain that this child is the a true heir of the father. So that's the problem. Okay? Clear problem. Kach nira lanu min hadavah. This is our opinion. Shemisha baal shivchato v'holida, shurat hadin she'ein haben poteret eshet aviv min hayibum. If someone has a child by his slave girl, this does not relieve his widow from yibum. V'tnan, mi sheyesh lo ben mikol makom poteret eshet aviv min hayibum, v'chayav al makato v'al kilachato, u'bnohu l'chol davar, chutz mimi shenolad lo min ha'shepcha min ha'nachrit. A child from a slave or from a Gentile woman is not considered as your child, and therefore there's a requirement of yibum. Ela mihu, that's what it says in the Gemara. So if we were paskining this shayla straight from the Gemara, we would have no problem. However, there was a major historical event that had intervened in between the time of the Gemara and the time of Rav Haigam. Ela, miyu yesh b'davar chaluka ben ga'onim achronim. V'ikav shela. However, there is a great dispute amongst the later ga'onim, and the source of this dispute is as follows. Bustanai resh kaluta. Dahu Chanichai, I guess it should say that it was the son of Chaninai. Shaba al Shivchato, Bas Kansroi Melach Parsi, the Yahav Le Nehile, Amar ben Katav, Melach Yishmael, Bamatana Vyeldabem. A famous case. Bustanai, the son of Chaninai, was given the daughter of Chosros, the king of Persia, by Amar ibn Katav, the Arab conqueror of Persia, of the entire district. He was given the daughter of the former Persian king as a wife. Okay? V'yalda ben, and she gave birth to a son, Umet, and then he died, Bustanai. V'yamdu echav l'mochro, and now their brothers wanted to sell the son of the Persian woman as a slave. V'nechlaku chachmei yeshivot b'davar zeh. This caused a dispute amongst the heads of the Gaonim. Yesh mehem sha'amru, kama delosh mishacher everhu, as v'tzarich shichru meyachal. Since he was never set free, he's considered a slave, and therefore he is a slave owned by his brothers. V'katav ma'arav chaninai dayanei debavazal, shtar shichru la hishicha mebetina, v'yesh mehem sha'amru. Some of them said, Bustanai nasi hava. Bustanai was a prince. After all, he was the Resh Galuta. Uviyado l'shachora, and he certainly was capable of setting her free. V'ilav d'havi shachora lo ba'aleh. And had he not set her free, he certainly would not have had intercourse with her. D'habe tirel kasavli ein adam oseh bilato bilatznut, v'kol shekein nasi. A person would not make his sexual act improper, and certainly not if he is the nasi. Uvusunai havi itle kama benimi nashim ksheirot. The case of issue of Yibum didn't arise in the case of Bustanai, but the issue of the Yichus of the child certainly did arise. There's still, now, how many hundreds of years later, a dispute as to the yichus of the children of Yungrad, of the Persian princess, as to whether they're really legitimate, full-fledged descendants of Bustanai. So he decides that in the present case, this child is to be construed as a full-fledged Jew and therefore cannot be sold by the brothers. But now, what about the Yibum? So here he gives a contradictory psak. Had the brother not already performed Yibum, we would have insisted on Chalitza. So that's, he decides, gives an illogical response. On the one hand, he decides that this child is not a slave and cannot be sold, but on the other hand, he's not a full-fledged heir. And furthermore, once the Yibum has taken place, we don't force the brother to divorce his wife. So it's rather strange. We would have.
Since he was born after, he was born before, rather, he freed the slave.
Yes, and therefore the child is a child of a slave?
Yes.
And therefore the child is a slave, right?
So when did he free him?
He didn't know. There was no act of freeing the child.
When he brought him to Shul.
To circumcise him.
Merely for the sake of being a slave, is the presumption.
That would be a presumption. And if you have to circumcise all your slaves' children as well. So the act of circumcision in and of itself was not a shichul.
Need tefillah in addition.
And you would need tefillah in addition.
Why would the kahal say, "Ache torienu ben mihu"? Is a slave.
They want it. It's a complicated problem. If you turn to the next page, I xeroxed for you from the Encyclopedia Judaica, the details of the case of Bustanai. And as you can see, this case of Bustanai was some 300 some odd years before Rav Haigon, so this was an event that had its impact over the hundreds of years.
Okay? Actually, when they say Hatshe Todienu Ben Mihu, his answer is, it's my son. It doesn't bother to even mention, you know, through what woman.
Well, they knew who the mother is. Right?
I think his answer is...
Yes, he admitted paternity. Okay? So, so after we skip the more legendary parts, it says, thereafter the king honored him and appointed him exilarch. Bustanai was appointed to be the Resh Galuta, to the great satisfaction of the Jews. After the Arabs conquered Babylonia, Caliph Omar confirmed Bustanai as exilarch. So after the Arab conquest of the region, he was still confirmed as the Resh Galuta. He gave Izdundad, one of the captive daughters of Khosrow II, king of Persia, to Bustanai in marriage, while the caliph himself married her sister. So, in fact, Bustanai was then the brother-in-law of Omar. Okay? Thereby giving de facto recognition to Bustanai as one of the successors of the kings of Persia. This legendary story throws light on the course of events after the death of Bustanai. The Persian princess bore Bustanai three sons. When Bustanai died, however, his other sons, by his Jewish wives, sought to treat their brothers by the Persian princess as slaves because their mother had not been converted to Judaism. The scholars of the yeshivot, however, decided in favor of Izbundad, and her relatives, who held high offices in the government, also decided in her favor. Her eldest son even married a daughter of the chief Dayan. Nevertheless, the question of legitimacy of her sons remained the subject of controversy in the halakhic literature of the Gaonic period and thereafter. Shvir HaGaon, that was Rabbi Gaon's father, in the 10th century made a point of stressing that he was the house of David, but not a descendant of Bustanai. Bustanai was the progenitor of the Babylonian exarchs of the period of the Arab rule. His first successors were the offspring of a son born by one of his Jewish wives. Among the offspring of his Persian wife who obtained the office of exarch was Zakai, a fourth generation descendant of Bustanai. So,
there's a contradiction here that between the Shuvah, which has a son, and here was that she had four, three sons.
Mm-hmm. There are some other problems with the Shuvah. For example, it says the Hu Chaninai, where it should say the No Shel Chaninai. So I'm assuming that the text that we have of the Shuvah has been emended on the basis of other historical information. And I would assume that the Jewish Encyclopedia Judaica's version is closer to the truth. Remember, even a century after this, the Rambam, who was very much opposed to this idea and didn't have too soft a spot in his heart for the Gaonim, rejected any of this extension of Ein Adam Osa Bilato Bilat Zmut to such cases. So he decided against the more lenient position that Rav Haigon is taking in this position. Okay. Let's go to the next Shuvah. Usha Sha'al Tem, page 13. And now we will find that there's just simply no firm position on this question. There'll be contradictions as we go along. Eved Orel Shelakacho Yisrael, Mutol Lakaimo Olo. Are you, as a Jew, allowed to keep a non-circumcised slave? That was the question. That it's not allowed to maintain, to keep a slave in your house who has not been circumcised. The Tanu Rabbanan, Mekaymin Avadim She'ein Malin, Devar Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Akiva, Omer Ein Mekaymin, V'Halacha K'Rabbi Akiva. V'Heichi Nami, So, according to this tshuva, it's just simply straight. If you happen to have a slave in your house, he has to be converted to be an actual Eved Kanani. You cannot keep a non-Jewish slave who has not been converted to that extent. If he refuses, then you have this period of 12 months, and if it can't be resolved within 12 months, then you have to get rid of him. That's a decision which is in conformity with the Gemara, but we'll see that the later other decisions that we'll find from the Gaonim are quite different. Doesn't say.
Definitely a financial loss, because they know he's got to, if they kept track, maybe just the 12 months.
Right.
This guy's got to get rid of him.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Here, another question. Usha Sha'altem. Eved Shamalo Rabo. Beitif Bimenu Dambri. You actually acquired a slave, and presumably this was a slave you circumcised the slave. V'chazalagiyuto. But the slave reverted to his non-Jewish practices, umacharo, and he's therefore the owner sold him, uliachar, to a non-Jew, presumably, uliachar mikain chazar Yisrael ulekachar. Now some other Jew bought the same slave. Does he need a second conversion? Tzarich la'atif mimenu damrit pam shniya, odilma betvila sagile. Kach ra'inu.
That shows that they do tefillah, actually, not just circumcision.
No, of course, you had milah and tefillah.
So why should they be under that under the classification of an eved anymore. That's definitely...
No, an eved requires tvila and milah and tvila. Becomes an eved kanani. No, no. Then he has tvila a second time if he ever becomes free. But
so why isn't he 100% Jew?
He's a 100% Jewish slave. He's a 100% eved. He is not obliged to mitzvot aseh shehazman groma. No? Doesn't count for a minyan, but he's a Jew. It's an eved kanani.
He's an eved kanani. There's an eved kanani who converted.
All eved kanani. There's no in between.
I don't understand.
You buy a slave. You can't maintain a non-Jewish slave in your house, according to the Gemara. We'll see what happens in the time of the Gaoni. But if you happen to have a slave, you have to convert him to the status of being a slave. You may have 12 months, according to what we just learned, to deal with this problem. But you can't maintain in your household a slave who is a Christian.
He never loses the status of slavery. Just that
his
status only changes from the standpoint of what? He's now considered
he's now a Jew. His shchita is a good shchita.
Oh, that, all right.
Everything, I mean, halachically, he is considered a Jew. As far as kiyum mitzvahs is concerned, he's at the same level as a woman. Not just a woman and a slave are not obligated for mitzvah sasesha zman groma.
So was it an economic status?
No, it's a halachic status.
No, but besides the fact that he's under slavery. He's a slave because he was sold himself into it.
No. This is not a Jew. This is a slave. You bought this. What is your problem? How does someone get to be a slave? He's captured in war.
Oh, that's your one.
Right? Okay. Or he's captured by slave traders. Or he happens to have been a slave and his father was a slave and somebody else, and you bought him in the slave market. Okay. This particular period is, I mean, I'm not sure. I've tried to find in the non-Jewish sources some history of the status of slavery in this region during this period. I couldn't find anything clear. In the Encyclopedia Britannica, they have a good discussion of slavery in Greece and in the Roman Empire. But I think we will learn more about the nature of how things are just by looking at these body of Chuvos. We will get a clearer picture than probably from just simply reading some history books which aren't devoted to this topic. Kachra'inu. This is the answer. But the question is clear, right? You bought a slave from a non-Jew, you performed milah, and it didn't take. And he was sold to another non-Jew, and now another Jew bought him. Kach ra'inu, shekevan shemalo ve'etvilo l'shum avdut shel Yisrael pa'am rishona, hechniso tachat hashchina l'kavel shabbat ba'ol mitzvot. V'yach al pi shechazal l'giyuto, eino chozer la'arlato rishona, Ela domel Yisrael mushumad. It's like an apostate Jew. Shekol Yisrael shenishtamei kevan shechazar b'tshuva eino tzorich tvila. You don't even need tvila a second time. V'kol shekein mila. Kach eved ze kevan shechazar Yisrael v'lokacho ein tzorich lachzir latif imenu damrit v'lo afilu lahatvilo ela harehu ki Yisrael mushumad shechazar b'tshuva. Okay? And now it deals with the second problem. V'Yisrael shalakach eved saris v'ratzo lachzir ol edat Yisrael ein tzorich ela tvilo v'ilvad. Ma'atam kevin shesaris hu ein chayv mitzumat milot, etc. So dealing with a technical problem there. Okay. Let's go to the next shura.
But what would happen if the slave second time he just refused.
Refused what?
He wouldn't have wanted to in the first place. He doesn't want to be a Jew. It just happens to be bought by a Jewish master who still is in close every shul. It happened to be bought the second time. He still doesn't want to be a Jew.
Well, the master has a problem, but there's no halakhic question here, other than it's probably a good idea not to keep that slave around the house. Okay? Next one is the Shuvah of Shmuel Bachofti. So if we look on our scorecard, we see that was around 997, is when he was gone. Okay. Someone said to his Eved, Anfi Sadi, in front of witnesses, he said, I'm setting you free, but there was no physical contract. Is a verbal manumission sufficient to set a slave free? A verbal statement on the part of the master setting the slave free is sufficient. The only requirement for a kinyan sudar is when there's a form of contract which involves a consideration. But in a case of manumission where there's no consideration, there is no requirement of a contract. And then he goes on to say that, and because we're running a little short in time, I'll just simply summarize what he says here. He therefore says that if someone says to his slaves, you are set free, then in front of witnesses, that is sufficient to set him free, and the witnesses can then go and write the get shifur. The Rambam is a little bit more careful about this halacha. He says that once this has happened, the owner is obligated to set the slave free, and the courts can then force the owner to write a get shifur. It's not the witnesses that write the get shifur, but it has to be the Baal, but he can be forced by the courts to do that on the basis of his verbal manumission. Now, here's another question. Next one.
Which may be the same thing with the woman, the man said it was
No. If you're trying to draw an analogy between the institution of slavery, which has disappeared, and the institution of marriage, which may or may not be on the verge of disappearing, we can debate that later. But at the moment, that's a bit of a touchy question as to whether you want to make an analogy between those two institutions. Okay. But here's an interesting question. Shusha'altem Yisrael Shemachar Avdol Agoy. This is, of course, an illegal operation. You're not allowed to sell your slave to a guy. V'shichoro oto ha-goy. But now that guy set the slave free. Mm-hmm. So here you have, someone has his Eved Kanani. He sold him to a non-Jew. The non-Jew set him free. V'hu rotze lehitarev v'Yisrael. Now this former Eved wants to marry a Jewish woman. He wants to be, he's a free man, right? He doesn't have any owner. Does he simply become free? Tzarich get shichru merabo rishon olo. In other words, how can his halachic status be affected by the act of his non-Jewish master? That's the problem here.
He should have just freed him, not sold him.
What he should have done and what he did do are two different things.
No, I mean, that's why the question is, because you...
The question, he sold this slave to somebody else. So he's still a slave. The original owner committed a crime by selling his slave to a non-Jew. But now the question is, how does this slave, who economically now is a free man, how does he technically, halachically, how does he become a full-fledged Jew? So it's a difficult problem. And the Gaon gives a resolution. Hachenis chazois l'namilta. This is what it appears to us. The afal gav the shecheru hahu goy. Even though the guy set the slave free, tzarich get shechur mirabo rishon l'meyal Yisrael. He needs a get shechur from somebody, and therefore it can only be his former master in order for him to become elevated to the position of a full fledged Jew. My timer. The goy dezavin avda filu migoy lo kanele elamase yudava hu gufe lo kanele the kidyam rinan amar chama bagoy amarav lo keach ebed ben hagoy vekadam atavar lishum ben chorin kana atzmo ben chorin matayim a goy gufa lo kanele mase yudeu lo kanele man zavin le shibude davi kanele keven lo kanele mafkin le shibude hilkach tzarech get mirabo risha. So that's his psak. In order to make this person into a full-fledged Jew, he actually requires some act by his former master, even though the former master doesn't have any ownership over him, he requires a get shifu. Okay? Next. All right. Rav Haizah. Ushisha Altem. Mekomot she'ein ha'yehudim motzin shvachot l'knot ella. It says mitzriot, but it really, I assume it means notzriot. That the, remember, in the Muslim countries, Jews were not allowed to own Muslim slaves, but they were allowed to own Christian slaves. And in the Christian countries, Jews were not allowed to own Christian slaves, but they were allowed to own Muslim slaves. So presumably this is a tshuva to a Muslim country, and I'm assuming that the phrase mitzriot should read notzriot, okay? I'll read it. There are lots of them around. It's permissible, according to the laws of the state, for Jews to buy Christian slaves. For a Jew to buy a Muslim slave involves a whole lot of danger. V'yesh mehem shemitgayrot la'altav, some of these Christian women who become slaves in a Jewish household become converted immediately. V'yesh mehem shemitgayrot la'achar zman, and some eventually become converted. V'yesh she'eino rotza lachzor klal, and some refuse to be converted at all. V'yisrael hashruyin b'yotan mekomot, the Jews that are living in these regions, nisrachim lahen biyoteh. It's an absolute essential to have slaves, right? Shelo yitzfalchu banav uvnotav ol ishto lahavi mayim al ktafehem min hamayinonot. You don't want to let your make your own children go down to the well and bring the water back, or you have your wife go bring the water from the well. That's certainly not pashnisht, as they say in Yiddish. Therefore, it's absolutely essential to have slaves in the house, right? You cannot live a normal existence without slaves. Well, let's say leforni, or to go to the furnace. Remember, in those days, if you wanted to bake your bread, you didn't have electric ovens or gas ovens in the house. You had a communal furnace where people took their dough in to bake. You im shvachot goyim, you don't want to have your wife go take the bread, the challah for Shabbos, and mix with the slaves of the non-Jews, uputzot, v'nimtzaot v'not Yisrael ba'ot v'vizayon v'sakana, and it's disgraceful for Jewish girls to be found taking the bread to the furnace or the bringing the water from the well. Mutar l'kaimon l'yoto shvachot achal pishalo nitgayru, v'yesh chushut l'shtabed b'hen olo. Okay? A clear situation. The Jews are no longer capable of forcing this Christian girl to convert. According to the Gemara, you're simply not allowed to keep her, right? You're not allowed to have the maximum period was 12 months, and after the 12-month period, you're not allowed to have a slave in your household, right? What other word should they use? It means the same thing. It's the assumption here being, according to the person who's posing this question, that you can't forcibly take this girl and dunk her into the mix. So your point is well taken. This implies that there's some requirement of free will attached to becoming Jewish here. You'll see from other tshuvos that we'll get to later that not all people maintain that. Okay.
But why don't you just think of hiring somebody to act as a servant rather than maintaining
what's that?
A slave in your house?
What is that? I mean, I don't think that institution exists. Right, Tim? Yeah, no. In any event, we see that here you're dealing with a community of Jews who are more or less what we would say upper middle class, right? Sounds like Brookline to me. Something, and you can't really manage without household help, and the only available form of household help is slaves. But it's against the Gemara. Kach ra'ino, Rav Haigon responds, sheshvachot elu mutar l'kayman af al pi shelo chazru behem, that you're allowed to keep these slave girls even though they have not converted. Ho'il utzuchim atem lahem tzorech gadol, since there's a great need
to have them. So therefore, he's saying that we'll just simply decide against the Gemara. Right? It's just a straight ruling against the Gemara. And but now what do you do with them? Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, you have to be sure that they don't do any work on Shabbat. ובמקום שהם מתיירים מן העבדים שלא יתגיירו, שלא יגלו סוד מישראל ומבקשי נפשם, there are places where maintaining non-Jewish slaves in the house represents a real danger, because these represent a fifth column within the Jewish community and can cause danger. בידו לדי סכנות ודאי שאין מקיימן אותם כל עיקר. אבל כגון שפחות הללו ששאלתם מותר לקיימן עדיין. Okay, so here it's just a straight ruling, no explanation given. Since we cannot really get by without slaves, then we just simply strike out what it says in the Gemara.
Would this be compared to like in the Shavuot Shel Shabbos, like a great loss, where they would use the, what's the term?
Yeah, this is what is
they used to allow certain things too, yeah. Because of a great economic right. loss?
Mm-hmm.
What's the word?
Hepsiburum.
Did these secular authorities allow Jewish slaves? I mean, it's
yeah. Well, we don't know of any such examples because there would always be Pidyon Shvuyim. The Jewish community would see to it that they would be redeemed. Next. Usha Sha'altem. Here's a... B'shvil Eved Yisrael Shabarach. A slave of a Jew escaped. ויאכל גיואלי גויים ושתה יין נסך או נשבע ואכל ושתה לרצונו וחזר בו. What to